Well, we are glad you're here. We hope you've had a great week. This is a hard message. I'm just going to let you know up front because we're going to be looking at a story, a new story in Genesis. That's, yes, it's a continuation of the whole story, the story of God. But this story is one that's going to leave maybe with more questions than answers this morning. And if I'm going to be fair to the story, I can't answer those questions for you, which means you got to come back, okay? It's just kind of the way it works. There's a lady, her name was Linda Burnett, who went to the grocery store one day, and she had come out of the grocery store, she'd put her bags in the back of the car, and she sat down in the driver's seat, closed the door, and she heard a gunshot, and felt something hit the back of her head. She reached back behind her head and felt just this goop. And of course, immediately she's terrified. She thinks she's holding her brains in. She's sitting there in a car, puts both hands there. A couple times she passes out, but then comes to, realizes that if I pass out, maybe this won't work. People are walking by. She is there for over an hour, just holding onto her head with this dazed look on her face. People are walking by. Finally, somebody notices her in the car, notices that she has this stunned look on her face, and she's just sitting there with both hands on the back of her head. And so finally somebody walks up and says, "Are you okay?" And she shakes her head, "No." And the person's kind of knocking on the window, says, "Well, open the door, your door's locked." And she goes, "No. What's wrong?" And she says, "I've been shot in the head and I'm holding my brains in." And the guy freaks out. He calls 911. Here comes the fire department, the police department. They break down her window, or break her window out, reach in, open a car door, and the policeman reaches in and begins laughing hysterically. Because what actually happened was she had her groceries in the back and a can of Pillsbury biscuits popped, hit her in the back of the head, and she is now holding the biscuits in her head. Great story. You know, adversity is part of life. And sometimes those times of adversity, sometimes those very difficult times in life will end up with stories like that where it's very easy to trace the end of the story and say, hey, everything turned out great. One of the things that I think Christianity has done a disservice to people is that we treat all heartaches like that. We kind of say, you know, well, everything's going to work out in the end. Everything's going to be okay. And while I do believe that, I also believe that's a simplistic answer to things. I believe there are some situations in life that are very, very difficult. And you may be going through one right now. You may be going through a time where you're just like, I can't make sense of this. You may be going through a time where you're just questioning God and you're not quite sure how to respond. You may be coming out of a situation like that, and all of a sudden you're starting to see the rainbow, the clouds break, and things are making sense. But we go through those times in life. And while I do believe in a God that controls them, we'll talk about that, I don't want to trivialize those times. They are tough. They are hard. It is difficult sometimes to make sense of them. We're going to begin dealing with a story about a guy named Joseph that 25 years of his life just don't make sense. But in the end, it is a God who is in control, who is working in his life to do what God wants to do to make him a great guy and to change a group of people. But we don't see that this morning in the story. All we see is kind of, how do I make sense of this? Have you ever had one of those times? Have you ever had a time in your life where, you know, you just really would like to sit down and, you know, email, you know, God@heaven.com and say, "God, I got a few questions for you because this is not working for me. That makes sense right now." Or you'd love to have, you know, the God hotline, 1-800-ANGEL, and call it and say, "Yo, God, we need to talk, and I need answers. Help me out." Have you been through those times? This morning in your worship folder, hopefully you got one of these. On the inside, you have a card, a piece of paper on the inside of this. And what I'd like you to do just right now for a moment, take that card out and a pen you got. If you didn't get a card and a pen, just grab a piece of paper or just whatever you can get around you. If you don't have anything, you just do this kind of mentally. But take just a moment. I'm going to give you about a minute and a half to do this. Take just a moment right where you are to jot down the last time in your life where you were going through something that was, you just couldn't find answers for it. And you really wish you could have had a conversation with God with some questions about it. Take a minute to do that right now. Just write down what was the last time in your life? Maybe it's something that went on this week. Maybe it was a couple weeks ago. Maybe it was a couple years ago. When was the last time you went through a time in life where you just could not make sense of things and you really wished you could have had God's email address and had a conversation with him? The story of Joseph in the book of Genesis is a story that teaches, is a flesh and blood example of one of the major teachings of the Bible. As we talk about God, and all of Genesis is the story of God, we meet some really cool people, and Joseph is awesome. I've said a number of times while we've been preaching and working through the book of Genesis that there's no heroes in Genesis, and most of the time, these guys we run into are characters. I mean, they have issues. They're not moral people. Why God chooses them and uses them, I don't know, because they're really pretty messed up. Joseph is kind of the exception. There's only one hero in the Bible, Jesus. He's it. He is the hero. He's the one we need to look to. He's the one we need to trust. But Joseph is a pretty good person to follow his example and look to some of the things he does. He's not perfect. He has issues. We're going to find in a few minutes he's a 17-year-old kid who's just kind of a snot nose. But as we look at the story of Joseph, he's a guy that God chose to use, and he really ends up having great integrity and great character in the midst of things that don't make sense. He ought to be the guy, as we look at it, that everything works out for. He ought to be the guy who ends up with the nice house and the great job, and God just ought to bless his socks off, but it doesn't happen, at least not up front. And we look at, here's all this big group of people who are just kind of messed up, and Joseph, these guys it works out for, Joseph it doesn't. And we have to wrestle with that as we look at the story of Joseph. As we talk about God, God kind of has two hands. We've seen one hand over and over again, the hand of miracle. That is when God chooses to just intervene in the life of people in a very supernatural way. Their life is struggling or there's a problem in life, and God literally, with the hand of miracle, reaches down and touches them. I want to tell you, there have been times in my life where I've literally seen the miraculous hand of God. I've known people who were literally healed. My dad was healed of a thyroid condition a number of years ago, and they had told him that it was pretty serious, and it could be life-altering, and maybe even life-threatening. It could be cancerous, and he experienced a warm sensation in this one event. 2 weeks later, he went back to the doctor, and they couldn't find the problem anymore. The miraculous hand of God reaching down, that is the hand of miracle. But there's another hand of God, and that is the hand of providence. The hand of providence is the unseen hand of God that is moving all events for his glory and our good. It is when God works in us and through us during good times and bad times, but he works in ways that we don't necessarily see, we don't necessarily recognize, we don't necessarily get, and he is working to accomplish his purpose in our life, and for those who trust Jesus, who have a relationship with him, he is working for their good. It is when the hand of providence that is at work, though, that is hard for us to make sense of. Joseph goes through this. We're going to see that God is orchestrating every event. He is in control of everything, even the evil choices of his brothers, to accomplish his purpose and plan in the life of Joseph and the life of his family. Now, that doesn't mean God did the evil, but it's kind of like, I remember my grandma had this quilt, okay? It was this quilt that was made up from all kinds of pieces of fabric. Many of them were ugly. Many of them were, scraps that just didn't, that it wasn't a beautiful piece of fabric. But what she had done is in a master way, she had woven them together in a beautiful way so they made this beautiful quilt when it was all put together. That is the way the hand of providence works. God works through even bad choices, even mistakes, rotten times in life, but in all of it, he is weaving it together. He is in control of it, and eventually he takes that and makes it something that is beautiful and makes sense. But I tell you what, when you're going through one of those rotten pieces of fabric, it's hard. It's difficult. And that's why trusting Jesus begins by saying, listen, I will follow you and trust you and serve you no matter what. I was down at the Cardinal baseball game the other night, and it was U.S. Army night at the Cardinal baseball game. And one of the things they did is they had about 15 young men and young women who were there taking the oath of being a United States soldier. And I sat there and I watched them. They're all in their fatigues and with the berets on and everything, ready to go. They're commanding, the recruiter who is there, said some things, and then led them through this oath. And I was listening to the oath. It went like this. I do solemnly swear or affirm that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, that I will bear the true faith and allegiance to the same, and that I will obey the orders of the President of the United States and the orders of the officers appointed over me according to the regulations and the Uniform Code of Military Justice. So help me God. They all raised their right hands and they repeated that. And I sat there thinking, I wonder if they know what they're doing. I wonder if they understand that what they just did is they just signed up to be sent and sleep in a foxhole in Iraq. I wonder if they understand that they just signed up to go sometimes multiple nights without sleep as people are shooting at them. I wonder if they understand that they just signed up to go through any hardship, any difficulty, anything that the United States Army puts them through. And I noticed that what they said is that I will do anything to protect the Constitution and to serve what the president and the people over me tell me to do. And as I was sitting there, it dawned on me, that's what it means to become a follower of Jesus. It means that what I say is, God, you are so good to me. And I know there may be times where I go through difficult things, but I am still going to serve you. There may be times where I have to spiritually sleep in a foxhole, but I'm going to trust you, and I'm going to go for you. I'm making a commitment to you. I'm serving you and following you. Joseph ends up being one of these types of guys. He gets holding on to his faith, even when it doesn't make sense. All right, background to the story. Here's what goes on in the story. We've got a number of characters. We've got Jacob. Jacob is Joseph's dad. And I just want to set this up before we get to the story. Jacob is Joseph's dad. He is a guy who has spent his life as a cheat and a deceiver. But in the story we looked at last week, Jacob ends up having this one-on-one, literally wrestling match, this knockdown dragout with God. And God changes his life. And he becomes somebody who really is committed to serving Jesus with all of his heart. But Jacob had four wives. Not a good idea. Two of them are sisters. Ends up having 12 sons, some other daughters, and he has this whole big family of people who are just like him. Those people will eventually become the Hebrew or the Jewish nation. They will become God's chosen people. They will become this people who live in Israel for a number of years, and after living in Israel, one person will come out of those people, Jesus Christ, who will die for the sins of all the world, including you and me. And as God's people are reading these stories, they've got to be looking at going, these are our parents? They're ridiculous. They're a mess. In fact, just before this story we're going to look at in Genesis 37, let me tell you some of the things that have happened. Reuben, who is the oldest brother of Joseph, ends up having an affair with his dad's wife. Not his mom, one of the other women who are his wife. He ends up having an affair, and Jacob hears about it but just overlooks it. Two of his other brothers end up killing a whole town because they raped their sister. One of his other brothers named Judah ends up having three sons. They're kind of wicked and weird and messed up. And the end result is that they die. He ends up having an affair with his son's wife. She dresses up like a prostitute. Just some really ridiculous stuff. By the way, if you want to enjoy, you know, those stories, there's a message we did a few months ago called Dirty Little Secrets where we kind of talked about all these stories. But here's the point. His family is totally messed up. And what God is about to do, the story of Joseph is this. God is going to take this grandpa, Jacob, and these kids, and eventually their kids, and he is going to change them into the type of people that can lead a great nation and be people after God. So how's he going to do it? God does it by raising up this one kid in this family named Joseph, changing his life from the inside out. And as he changes his life from the inside out, what happens is that Joseph then becomes kind of the shining light in this family that God uses to change the rest of them. Say, I don't know about you. I want a God who blesses my outside life, but kind of leaves my inner life alone. I want a God who gives me good stuff, and I have a lot of material things, and my family's great, and no problems. But leave me alone on the inside so I don't ever have to wrestle with who I am and who God is. Just let me believe what I want and be okay with myself and all that kind of stuff. But what God is more concerned about is who I am on the inside. And God is going to change his whole family through this one kid. So if you have your Bible, Genesis chapter 37, we're going to look at this story. And what I want to do after we look at the story is wrestle with some questions that as we read this, we ought to have. And maybe you have about your own life right now. Genesis 37. Says, Jacob lived in the land of his father's sojournings in the land of Canaan. These are the generations of Jacob. By the way, I'm sorry, I forgot this. At the end of your row, there's some Bibles. If you didn't bring a Bible this morning, we'd love for you to pick one of those up and use it this morning. Read it with us, the Genesis, first book of the Bible, and read that with us. If you don't have a Bible at home, we'd love for you to take that, keep that as our gift to you, okay? Chapter 37, I'm in verse 2 now. These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was pasturing the flock of his brothers. He was a boy with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah. Those are two of his dad's wives, okay? And he's out hanging out, watching the flocks and the pastures with his older brothers, his father's wives. Joseph had a bad report of them to their father. Israel loved Joseph more than any other of his sons because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a robe of many colors. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him and could not speak peacefully to him. All right, here's what goes on. Jacob is the dad. Joseph is the youngest son. Actually, he ends up with a younger brother named Benjamin, but he's the youngest son in this story. He has a bunch of older brothers, but they're all from different moms. And Joseph is the oldest son from his mom, whose name was Rebekah. She was the wife that Jacob loved. He has these four women, but he had one favorite. And he loved her more than the others. The other brothers always felt jealousy towards that woman, always felt struggles, just was not comfortable with even their brother Joseph because he was always the favored son of the favored wife. And it became this contentious relationship already from the get-go. Well, then his mom has a second son named Benjamin, and she dies during childbirth. And so Jacob loses his favorite wife. Even though God had changed the heart of Jacob, he still had issues. And this issue of favoritism was a big deal. And we see this, you know, you see this in parents today where they'll have, you know, two or three kids and it's very obvious who their favorite is. The other kids are hurting. They don't know how to respond. Well, that's kind of what's going on. Joseph is the favorite kid because his mom was the favorite wife, and it's just kind of a mess. The brothers don't like him. Their lives are just weird and messed up. And so we have this contentious relationship. And what happens is that Jacob decides to make his son management. You know, he's the guy that where everybody else is wearing, you know, shirts with their name on it. He's the guy who's got a suit and a tie and a clipboard who does nothing but go around and give reports. And the way that his dad shows everybody in the family that he's the important one is he makes him this pimped out coat, right? He makes him this, you know, multicolored, long, roll up the sleeves, floor length jacket, you know, kind of like the one that we have over here. That's just multicolored. It's beautiful. Now, some of the guys are wanting to do this. They thought I should come out for this message in like this spray-painted fur coat. But I told them, I don't think you can find a fur that big. That's a lot of animals they'd have to sew together to make it work. Anyway, but here's Joseph. His dad gives him this really cool, this really beautiful coat. But it's more than just the giving of a coat. The giving of a coat signifies position. And what he did is his dad took the youngest son, Joseph, put him in management of the family business over all his other brothers. The coat was long, which signified he's not going to work. He's just going to watch with the clipboard. The other brothers who were shepherds, who were running the family business, they have all these flocks, they're going to wear short sleeve stuff that's knee length, that's going to be out of the way, that's going to be easy for them to work in. They've got rough hands and great farmer's tans because they're out in the sun all the time with their little cloak on, and this is their life. And now their youngest brother, who they already don't like, is now in management. He's the one going around with the clipboard going, hey, you messed up. Hey, you better stay up later and watch those sheep. Listen, don't you treat those cows. I'm telling dad. And his dad puts him in this position where he is now over all of them, and they despise him. They hate him. It says they can't even speak peacefully. They cannot even have a kind word, a positive conversation with Joseph. And this is this kid, 17 years old, running the company. Not because he necessarily deserved it, but because his dad liked him best. And he's got soft hands because he's not a worker. He's holding the clipboard. He's just, you know, kind of this kid. And they despise him. And then something crazy happens. He starts having these dreams. The first dream is this. He dreams one night. And in these dreams, what literally has happened, God is speaking to him. He has this dream. And the first dream he sees, he and his brothers all out in the field. They're all out working on harvesting wheat. And as they harvest wheat, each of them has this sheaf of wheat, this bundle of wheat. And all of a sudden, his bundle of wheat stands up. And all the other bundles of wheat begin to kneel down and go, you are important, you know, that kind of stuff. And then he wakes up and he realizes that through this dream, God was speaking to him. I had a dream the other night. I was dreaming about snakes. You ever had those dreams? You know, where you're just like, you know, I'm not getting out of the bed because I'm dreaming about snakes. I'm really uncomfortable. But here's the weird thing. In my dream, a snake attacked me with a knife. I wonder what God was trying to say to me in that. You know, lay off the salsa at 11 o'clock, probably. Anyway, but for this situation, what's going on is it's very clear. God is speaking to Joseph through his dreams. The second dream he has is that he is this star, and all of a sudden, the sun and the moon and all the other stars start bowing down to Joseph. And it's very clear what he's seeing in these dreams. He is seeing, and literally it's prophetic. God is speaking to Joseph, showing him something about his future. He feels the voice of God, and it is saying, listen, your mom, your dad, and all your brothers are going to serve you. How'd you like to have that kind of, you know, revelation? You're sitting at your work one day, and all of a sudden this thing pops up on the screen and says, work hard at your job because someday you're going to run this company, you know? All these people are going to worship the ground you walk on. I mean, that would be cool, but you know what's not cool is if you had like that kind of dream or that kind of interaction with God, and then you went and told everybody. And that's what Joseph does. Joseph runs back to all his brothers going, hey, dudes, I know you don't like me, and you can't say anything nice to me, but check this out. I had this dream, and in my dream, there were 12, you know, bales of straw or 12 bales of hay. One of them had a big old Joseph. It had a multicolored coat, floor length, you know, and your bales bowed down and worshiped my bales. And then, hey, guys, next morning, hey, guys, check this out. You had names, stars with your names on them, and then I had, and all your stars, they bowed down to me. Even the sun and the moon bowed down to my star. Well, you know, that's just not the kind of thing you go back and tell people, you know? It's kind of like when we as Christians try to talk about Jesus, and we try to talk about the fact that we trust Jesus with all of our heart, and that while we honor people who follow other religions, that the Bible's very clear that there's only one way to get to heaven, and that's a hard thing. And boy, people don't like to hear when we feel like we know the real God, that he's spoken to us, that we've trusted him, that the good news is Jesus. And people are put off. They're offended. Well, you're just arrogant. You're just stuck up. You think you know it all. No, I don't. I don't think I know anything, except I know God's changed my life. But people in our culture will respond much like his brothers. They are not happy with him. They hate him. They despise him. His dad kind of says, hey, you know, I don't know what kind of stuff you're telling Joseph, but not a good idea to be spreading these stories. So the story goes on that his brothers end up going out to a place called Shechem. They take the sheep several miles away. They go out to Shechem. They're tending the sheep. And in verse, we'll pick it up in verse 15. What happens is his dad says, all right, son, put your coat on, show that you're in management, grab your clipboard, go find your brothers, make sure everything's okay. And he's wandering, he's looking for his brothers, and he gets to Shechem. Verse 15 says, a man found him wandering in the fields, and the man asked him, what are you seeking? I'm seeking my brothers, he said. Tell me, please, where they are pasturing the flock. And the man said, they've gone away. I heard them say, let us go to Dothan. So Joseph went after his brothers and found them at Dothan. And here's what happens in the rest of the story. I encourage you to read it. It's a hard story. Here's this kid that honored God, even though he was kind of a snot-nosed teenager who thought he ran the world, but he did trust Jesus. And God had spoken to him and said, listen, I'm going to use you, and I'm going to use you in such a way that even your brothers are going to acknowledge your place in my plan. And dad tells him to go find his brothers, and he goes out, and he's wandering through Shechem, and he can't find his brothers, but he just happens to run into this guy who sees him wandering just aimlessly. He's just kind of wandering, not sure where to go. And a guy says, what are you doing? He says, I'm looking for my brothers. And the guy goes, well, I just happened to hear your brothers say they were going to move to Dothan. And so Joseph goes to this town. It's about 4 or 5 miles away from Shechem. He travels there. When he gets there, he sees his brothers at a distance. He sees the herds and the sheep. He realizes who it is. He's walking up, and his brothers get this plan. They said, we are so sick of hearing these dreams. We are so sick of dealing with our snot-nosed brother. We are so sick of daddy's favorite. He's alone. There's nothing he can do. Let's see what becomes this boy's dreams now. And they come up with this plan. They said, listen, we're going to capture him. We're going to kill him. We're just going to take that sweet little coat that daddy gave him, dip it in blood. We're going to take it back to daddy. And so here he comes. And just before he gets there, Reuben, the oldest brother, who maybe is trying to get back in good graces with dad because he'd already done something weird with his, you know, dad's wife, says, listen, let's not kill the kid. Let's just throw him in that well over there. and we'll leave him there, and we'll figure out what to do with him. But let's not kill him. At least a moment of sanity in the life of Reuben. So they catch Joseph, they throw him down, and then they throw him in this well where he can't get out. It's kind of a deep, you know, dugout hole that they would fill with hard, like a concrete substance, so it would gather water during the rainy season. He can't get out. Joseph's down there. These guys go and have lunch. They just go, you know, they're out there having a good old time, eating lunch, just hanging out with their brother down in this well. No compassion, no pity. For some reason, Reuben had gone away for a few minutes, and while he's away, this band of people, these Ishmaelites, who are just this band of people who don't serve God, don't know Jesus, they don't know him from a hole in a wall, they come through, and the brothers come up with this idea, why kill him when we can make some dough off of this guy, where we can get some change? And so they take Joseph, their brother, and they sell him into slavery, 20 pieces of silver. And they take the money, and all of a sudden, the caravan is gone. Reuben shows up after that and says, where's Joseph? They're like, he's gone, man. And he's brokenhearted. He realizes he was going to try to save Joseph and rescue him, and that opportunity is gone. And so now he's got to join in a lie. He tears his clothes because he's brokenhearted. They've derobed Joseph. They've taken that beautiful robe off. Now they dip it in blood, and they go back to their father, and they hand their father the bloody robe that's been dipped in goat's blood. And they say, isn't this your son's? Isn't this your favorite kid's robe? I mean, you know, this is the one you gave him to him. We found this out in the field. Jacob, his dad, is just crushed. Takes that bloody robe, gathers it up, holds on to it, and begins weeping. And the Bible says here that all of his sons and daughters come around him and try to console him. What punks. They're the ones who did this, and they're patting daddy on the back going, it's going to be okay. Dad, it's all right. You know, God is good. Just trust Jesus. It's all right. And Jacob goes, I cannot be consoled over this. This is beyond my ability to deal with it. Meanwhile, the last verse of this chapter, chapter 38, we end up with this kid who heard from Jesus, who's trusting God with all of his heart, and this is what he ends up. Meanwhile, the Midianites had sold him in Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the captain of the guard. Here's the story. Joseph wakes up one morning, the prized son in his dad's household, hearing the voice of God telling him he was going to be somebody. At the end of that day, he is on a caravan, and a number of days later, he is now a slave in a house that's several hundred miles away from home. How do we make sense of that? See, here's the point. This is what I kind of want to do just for a few minutes with you today. There are times in life where any nice, neat little pat on the back just aren't going to do it. And I think one of the things, if you trust Jesus, if you are a follower of Jesus, one of the things that I believe that God has opened his heart for us to do is to have conversations and to question him. Not question him, God, I'm not going to believe in you more, but questions to say, God, I don't know how to make sense of this. We really find this all through the Bible. We find this in the life of this guy named David who becomes a king, but through his life he goes through incredible hardship, sometimes of his own making and sometimes just because he was a kid who followed Jesus. We find this in the life of prophets, guys like Isaiah and Jeremiah, where as they're writing about God and what God is saying, they will stop and say, God, I don't know how to make sense of this. Jeremiah writes a whole book, the name of the book is Lamentations, that is just one big question. God, why did you let this happen? There are other people in the Bible who have questions. The Apostle Paul has a question where he says, listen, I am suffering. I have this thing that he calls a thorn in my flesh. He says, I asked God three times to take it from me, and all three times God said no. And most importantly, we even find Jesus asking a question of God. Is it okay for us to have questions when we're struggling? And the answer is absolutely. As long as it starts from a heart that said, listen, I signed up, I took the oath, I'm in. I'll go. But God, help me wrestle with this. But the hard part, and here's part of what I want to tell you with this story, is that we don't always get the answers right up front. God is trying to build character and change our lives, and sometimes things will not make sense. We were sitting here talking this morning before we prayed, and one of the guys shared how a friend of his had hopped on an airplane and gone overseas. He gets to the airport and gets a phone call that says his wife had died. He has to hop on an airplane, come right back. How do you answer that question? Why? When people ask you about September 11th, it's awful hard to make sense of that, isn't it? And when Joseph is sitting in Potiphar's house and Jacob is holding on to a bloody robe, where's God? So just real quick, I want to wrestle with a few of the questions that I think people will ask about this story when you get here, and even your own life. One of the questions I think people will ask is the question, where are you? God, where are you? I don't get it. I mean, you spoke to him in dreams, but boy, when he needs your help, you didn't bail him out. Where are you? Why didn't you show up? Can you imagine Joseph sitting there going, wait a minute, God, I had these dreams. They were very clear. I knew you spoke to me. Where are you? What is going on? Sometimes I think we make two mistakes when trying to wrestle with God. Because I want you to understand, I believe in the providence of God. This story is a story of providence. We are eventually going to see all the way through the story that from day one, God was in control doing something absolutely incredible. But today, we don't see the hand of God. We just see this kid who got sold into slavery and a dad who's broken over it. Where is God? Where are you? Have you ever had those times where you just want to ask, God, where are you? I don't know how to make sense of this. Why didn't you show up? I mean, I believe that your hand's at work, but I'm just not seeing it. And sometimes we run to this idea called deism. Deism is the basic belief that God created this universe kind of like a watchmaker. He wound the watch up, and then he let it run, and he took off, and he went on vacation to Disney World. And he'll be back someday, but right now he's on vacation, and this world's just kind of running the way it's supposed to run. And when it's time for it to run down, God will come and wind it up again or whatever he needs to do. But right now, we're just kind of on our own. We're out here just doing what we need to do, making the best of our lives. And that's one of the common beliefs about God, that, you know, I'm just doing the best I can, and sometime God and his will work it out, yada, yada, yada. And God is off somewhere. He's not really here. That's it. And we reject that view. We believe that the Bible is very clear that God is intimately involved in our circumstance, even when we can't see the hand of providence, he's there. But the other view is a view held by a group of people who believe in this idea of prosperity ministry or prosperity gospel. You know, those people, you know, are the people who say, listen, if you just believe the right things and you have the right faith, and if you're struggling right now, if you're having problems, it's because your faith isn't strong enough. Listen, my situation is totally up to me. And if I can just believe the right things, I'll get myself out of this situation. God will make it happen because of my faith. And I want to tell you, the Bible doesn't teach that. The Bible teaches that we will encounter hard times. We will have times where our faith is challenged and where even we come to points where we question God. In Psalm 13, David says, God, how long is it going to be before you show me your face again? How long before I see you again? Why have you forsaken me? And I want to tell you that God's okay with that question. There are times where we will have struggles in life, and we're going to wonder where God is, and it's going to be hard for us to find him. But that doesn't mean he's taken off. It just means that in my heart, I need to resolve to come back to that oath I took that says, if I end up in a ditch for you, I'll trust you. I'll stay there. You know, we may end up asking about this. In Romans chapter 8, verses 35 and 38 through 9, there's a great verse that gives us hope in that. Who then can separate us from the love of Christ? Trouble, hardship, persecution, hunger, poverty, danger, death? I'm certain that nothing can separate us from the love. Neither death nor life, angels nor any heavenly rulers or powers, the present nor the future, nor the world above, nor the world below. There's nothing in all creation that will ever be able to separate us from the love of God, which is ours through Christ Jesus our Lord. Where are you? Second question, why didn't you stop this? Why didn't you stop this? There's an interesting part of this story where it talks about Joseph showing up in Shechem, and he is wandering aimlessly. He can't find his brother. He's just wandering around. I read it a few minutes ago, and you kind of read that going, why did this get included in the story? Why is this there? And I think the reason that God chose to include this in the story is that he is showing you that if he hadn't have been wandering in this place at this certain time, and if he hadn't just happened to run into this guy, he would have gone home. He would have said, I can't find my brothers. They're not in Shechem. I don't know where to look. I'm headed back to my dad and say, they're not there. But he just happened to be wandering where he just happened to wander by this guy who just happened to hear his brothers talking and say where they were going. And all God had to do was remove that guy from the scenario, and none of this story happens. You ever have those times? God, why didn't you stop this? We're going to eventually see that God was protecting his people and even that part of the world because that guy showed up. But when we read this story, we're like, you know, just take that one domino out, and Joseph's okay. Why didn't you stop this? We may end up asking, what are you doing? God, what are you doing? What are you up to? Why is this happening in my life? You know, Joseph's the good kid. He ought to be the one who ends up being okay. And sometimes we can't make sense of that. Romans 8, again, says, we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good, those who are called according to his purpose. For who before knew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his son, in order that he might be the firstborn among many brethren. What are you doing, God? What are you up to? I can't see it. I know that you're trying to work for my good, but I can't make sense of it now. And last thing, a fourth question, I'm sorry, is what did I do? Sometimes we get those situations where we're like, God, is this my fault? John chapter 9, there's a story about a man who was born blind, and his disciples come to Jesus and said, who sinned, this guy or his parents? And Jesus said, nobody. We're not going to pin blame. There are times when I'm going through difficulty that I need to stop and say, God, is this because of me? And if it is, I need to repent. I need to get right with God. But not all our bad stuff in life is because of my mistakes. Last question we might ask, and that Joseph might have asked, is what do I do? And that's the most important question. God, where are you? What are you up to? I can't make sense of this. Did I do something wrong? Okay, God, what do I do here? How do I work through this? How can I trust you? How can I follow you? How can I serve you? How can I obey you? Job is a guy, the whole book of Job is a story of a guy who lost everything in one day. Boom. Just like that. All gone. God allowed Satan literally to steal his family, his wealth, and even his health from him. We end up with Job sitting in this pile of ashes, just depressed because he lost everything. Man, it's one of the situations like the Joseph story. We don't know how to make sense of it. But then they ask him, listen, how can you trust God? I want you to look at his response, what he says. Job arose and tore his robe and shaved his head and fell on the ground and worshiped. Said, naked I come from my mother's womb, naked I'll return. The Lord gave and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. In all this, Job did not sin or charge God with wrong. See, sometimes it's hard. It's easy. It would be very easy for me to sitcom this message, okay? You know what I mean? You start with a problem. You know, Theo is failing school and he can't read. And by the end of the program, we got it all worked out. 30 minutes, man. We work at our TV has shown us that we can work out all of life's problems in a 30-minute time frame, right? Just a couple commercials and a mom and dad who will come up with the right answers and everything's good. Everybody's crying and hugging each other. Everything's wonderful, right? Except 30-minute sitcom answers aren't going to work in real life. I just want to let you know that this story is a great story. It's a story about the unseen providential hand of God that is orchestrating all events. But as we end the story this morning, it doesn't make sense. And so what's Joseph going to do? Is he going to get ticked off at God, shake his fist at God and say, I don't deserve this? Is he just going to ditch God? Or is he going to be the type of person who says, I can't see your hand, but I am going to trust your heart? A few minutes ago, you wrote on a sheet of paper a time in your life that was difficult. We're just going to have a time of reflection this morning. The time of reflection is just going to be, you know, a few minutes. We're going to have a song playing, a video up here. And we're going to give you a chance to just kind of interact with God over some of these questions. And just say, you know, you may want to write a prayer. You may just want to write, God, I'm going through something right now that just is horrible. I can't make sense of it, but I trust you. You may want to write something that says, I haven't even met you yet, Jesus, but I want you in my life to help me make sense of things. You may be the type of person who likes to draw and doodle, and you may doodle something. You may fold it into something. We had a kid when I was in a youth ministry at Baldwin. He used to bring gum, and he'd chew 3 or 4 pieces of gum. He'd sit through the whole service, and he'd use the foil wrappers and make little foil characters of the things that the pastor was preaching on. At the end of service, he'd come up with this creation that he'd made. That may be you. Whatever it is, we just want to give you a few minutes right now as we kind of near the close of this just to say, all right, man, tough stuff, but God, it's real, and just to process that. So just right where you are, take out your pen, your card, whatever you feel led to do, write a prayer, piece of art, maybe just silent reflection for the next few minutes. Then I'll come back in a minute and we'll talk about Jesus a little bit and we'll close. You know, when you have those unanswered questions, the place to go is Jesus. Not because he's always just going to give any answer. You're not going to get an email back going, all right, I'm going to explain it all to you. Sometimes God leaves those questions unanswered because he's working our life. But he's a good place to go because, first of all, he understands, he knows, he gets it. He has felt that. In fact, did Jesus ever have a question for God, his Father? He was hanging on the cross for you and for me, paying the penalty for your sin and for mine. And he cries out from the cross, my God, why have you forsaken me? Where are you, God? I mean, I'm connected to you. I love you. I know that I'm doing, but right now I don't feel your presence the way I should. And what's crazy is the story of Joseph and the story of Jesus, there are more parallels. The whole story points to Jesus. For example, Joseph was sold by those who were closest to him for some coins. Jesus was sold by one of those who was closest to him for some coins. Joseph is a kid who was envied by people without a cause. Jesus was envied. Both of them were rejected and condemned to die. Both of them were stripped of their clothing. There's a lot more parallels of Jesus than Joseph. And I want you to understand, Jesus understands what it's like to go through a time where it just doesn't make sense. It's hard and it's painful. He gets that. He knows. Not only that, he cares. He loves you deeply. He's crazy about you. And even in the midst of the hard times, he's there with you if you just trust him. But not only that, he's in control. Listen, ultimately, Jesus is the one who is making, who is the right hand or the left hand of providence, who is the hand that is orchestrating events to work them out. And even though we can't see him, even though we can't feel him sometimes, even though we wish the hand of miracle would come in, the hand of providence is working God's plan in us. We just need to trust him. So that's a challenge this morning. As we worship, as we close this morning, as we have a time where we just reflect on this, respond, our response today is worship. Because in the Bible, the response always, I mean, this message may totally have hit home with you. Or it may be something that you need to put in a file and hold on to for a few months because maybe down the road you experience something. But if you're experiencing hardship, the response always is to worship. Because when I worship in the midst of hardship, it's kind of like saying, God, I don't get this, but I know you're in control and I trust you. And so that's one of our responses. We're going to take up offering this morning. That is for those who are part of Genesis. If you're visiting, as the plates come, that's not for you. That's really for the people who are part of our church, a way to say, God, you've given so much to me, and now I'm giving back to you. You may choose to sit right where you are with the piece of paper and the pen and continue working while we're singing, whatever it is. You respond to God, open your heart to him. He'll do something cool in your life this morning if you just trust him. I'm going to pray after I pray. You can stand unless you prefer to sit and work on your thing or just sit and pray. Stand and sing with us as we worship and honor God this morning. Jesus, we love you. We praise you. Thank you for being the presence in the midst of our struggle. Thank you that even in our unanswered questions, you are still God and you're still there. In your name I pray. Amen.